Sarha Damodar Varakalatan Jagannath Baladev Subhadraki. So we are always delighted to have the samskaras in the community, rites of passage, because there are times when we have a wonderful opportunity to collectively to pray for, to support, and to watch members of the community undergo very important changes in their lives. We want to greet them, to meet them as they make such changes, and we want them to meet and to greet and to be there with us as we make our own changes. Every samskara is very important, because the samskaras are hopefully to remind us why we are in these bodies and how to properly use and take full advantage of the situations that are upon us. The same senses that can keep us incarcerated lifetime after lifetime can be used to free us once and for all in dealing in the material paradigms, the material realm. The same gathering that people can come together to celebrate sense gratification. Gatherings can also be used, healthy sanghas, as a chance to address Rishikesh, or the master of the senses, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. It's not that spiritual life ever should be considered, what to say, should it be acted upon, as if it is something that is just about avoidance of activity, or refraining from association, or ignoring heterogeneity, variegatedness, and the beauty of sambandha, of association. But it's the quality of our association that determines the quality of our life. If we are serious about our spiritual quest, we will be very serious about who we associate with, how we associate with them. We'll be very serious about what we bring to environments or gatherings, and what we take away. Last Sunday we were speaking about how the serious-minded devotee is always either learning something or teaching something. And in between is this preparation for one or two of the other. Because one will be mission conscious, realizing that they're in foreign territory, in literally hostile environment, because the body, with its constant agitating senses, is a hostile environment that is constantly trying to remind the living entity that there's nothing more than just the physicality, the externality. There's nothing more than simply to try to lord over what one surveys. There's nothing more than to try to acquire whatever one can for him or herself, which is diametrically opposed to spiritual acceleration. So I want to continue the theme we were discussing. We're writing a new book on Beggar on the death or near-death experience. And we were discussing last week how to die before dying. The idea is accepting that we're not really residents of this world, living in such a way that one is already preparing themselves and gradually become more and more aware of what one will be eternally. We are what we practice. We are what we think constantly. What we think determines what we speak and determines what we do. It's the mind that has captured us lifetime after lifetime in the temporary existence and the transitory existence of material culture. And it's the same mind that can say death to the illusion and the confusion, death to the temporary, and real life, full vibrance to the eternality. We are sanatana, we are eternal, but we work overtime trying to convince ourselves that we are much less. Every one of us are bigger in many, many ways over than who we think we are and who most people relate to us as. We are all pure in our ultimate nature. In our original soul, we're all pure, and that we are temporarily experiencing heavy amnesia. So these samskaras are designed, as we were discussing, to help us to fulfill the mission of life. Prabhupada says life is to be able to die glorious like Grandfather Bhishma. So life is really preparation for the ratification of the temporary and accepting the eternal and the real. So life is designed to help us to know how to be in this world, but to not to be enslaved by it, captured by it, or slowed down by what people normally call the normative culture, which is mainly about eating, sleeping, mating, and descending. I read a quote of Prabhupada is explaining about the mindset and culture being faultless. And this is what these kind of samskaras, from first of taking grain to impregnation to leaving the body or death, and all in between that, marriage and going to school and so many other things. But they're not just activities to celebrate just for the sake that somebody has now grown older or someone is having an experience. But it's activities to remind us and prepare us for the ultimate experiences. Because all of those experiences are ultimately to be had in the spiritual world with the divine couple. Prabhupada is giving a lecture on Bhagavad Gita 5:14 to verse 22. And he makes a reference, he says, quote, "One who has cultured himself that the different activities of the material world have nothing to do with him, his only business is to become Krishna or God conscious, then it is to be understood that he has conquered death even in this present life. This sort of equilibrium in the transcendental state is the transcendental state of Krishna consciousness. This is called faultlessness. It is faultless life." Read that again. "One who has cultured himself that these different activities of material world have nothing to do with him." So we undergo, we engage ourselves in the activity, but we are at the same time to be watching as if we are separate from all of the things that's going on around us, that they're part of our experience, but part of our temporary experience, that we're something outside and greater than that. Just as you're participating in the play, in a drama. So you're there, and you're undergoing the role, you're speaking your line, but it is something that you are doing, and you are supposedly to be in control of what you are involved in, but you are more than that. The drama or the nightmare that we live in these imprisoned bodies, is to use the body to glorify the Lord so that we will not have to, again, be in situations where we are limited by the stagnation of the temporariness of the material body. This is to be understood that he has conquered death even in this present life. So not that one has to physically die to be able to conquer death. Not that one has to physically die to be able to realize and experience the spiritual world. It is not that one has to physically die to know what their eternal rasa is in the spiritual world. It's not that one has to physically die to hear Krishna's flute, to hear his ankle bells. As a matter of fact, we are dead in the sense of spiritually dead until we're able to begin to have these kinds of experiences. These experiences become wholesome and fulsome as we give up the lower taste. This is the param distirnavartate. We have to replace something that is distracting us, remove that to the side, put it in the secondary category to be able to embrace that, that is primary and that is ultimately joyful, fulfilling, and also eternal. Cannot have both as number one priority. Must maintain body and soul together so that we take away from so much energy to the secondary so that we can be able to honor the primary. Prabhupada says this is the position of the faultless person. I want to share a little reflection today, also looking at death, but not in a morbid sense, but in a sense of looking closer at life. in the sense of looking closer at how to be mindful and how to be sensitive and to scrutinize what we do every moment, every second, to see if it is really giving us life. So sometimes to understand life, we have to look at death. To understand death, we look at life. To understand birth, we must look at death. To understand the process of transmigration, we look at birth. This little child that was here, was taking her first grain, just some short years ago, was a grown living entity in some type of environment, in some type of body, in various types of relationships. This same little child, little children, and even ourselves have had many, many, many lifetimes, many, many different experiences, and unfortunately many disappointments. So we've come back into the mature world to once again engage in the school where we have a chance to graduate, if in fact we can become faultless, as Srila Prabhupada is describing. So therefore, all of our activities, all the limbs of bhakti, all the ninefold processes of things that we do are as valuable as we honor them as an offering to the Lord, and as valuable as it helps to remind us who we in fact really are and prepares us for accepting that particular lifestyle that we have put on hold. Prabhupada explains something here in reference to the little reflection I'm going to read. And this is titled, A Dead Man Walking. A Dead Man Walking. There are millions of people on the planet who are dead and who are walking, who are thinking that they are successful, or thinking about trying to achieve something, thinking about certain kind of happiness, but in most cases it's all temporary, and every moment they're losing the just exact things that they're trying to maintain or trying to acquire. Everything material disappoints us, deteriorates, and then is devastated. Every single material thing. There's nothing materially that remains forever. And so therefore, someone who lives his or her life for things that are temporary or for things that themselves do not have real life is associated with real death. When someone is even thinking that they have many commodities and many things to have to associate, that usually gives people some temporary happiness, they're even that much more dead. When someone is pursuing mundane scholarship as if it's the all in all, distinction, adoration, profits, whatever it may be, as if it is the all in all, they're to that degree dead. To the point that someone is not enslaved by such. Someone is not controlled, or their life is not geared and motivated by such. To that extent, they are alive and vibrant, beginning to reinstate the ultimate glorious consciousness. If most people are living for eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and just trying to improve on that, they're trying to alter or just have different combinations, permutations of a morbid, dead situation. And so it is called the chewing of the chewed, or it's the constant activities of looking for the ruchi, looking for the taste, but obviously in the wrong places. So spirituals really are trying to constantly become fully alive by being in touch with the source of life and pleasure. And of course, Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure, and the soul in its original nature, you see, is part and parcel of the Lord. And as it engages in sense gratification of unhealthy egocentricity, it temporarily separates itself from the beautiful, vibrant, and flowing love and knowledge and eternality that is there. So, Prabhupada says in a statement in October of 1977, Prabhupada says, quote, do things very carefully. I am already dead. But still, I am giving you instructions as far as I can. Do things very carefully. I am already dead. But still, I'm giving you instructions as far as I can. Unquote. He was reminding us by this statement that soon he would be leaving. But also he was sending us a reminder that we are all around the corner from death. We must do the necessary while we can. So Prabhupada was sending us a statement that he, as well as anyone who visits even Krishna only stays in this world for a certain time, because this is not their home or any of our homes. So when Srila Prabhupada left the planet, we were very overwhelmed, because the inevitable we somehow did not fully accept until we had no choice. And this is life in this material world, is that all around we see death, all around we see that the most permanent thing is change itself. The most unequivocal categorical appointment is that everyone has an appointment for death, and when that time comes, nothing can change it, and when it's not that time, nothing can accelerate it, other than one's karma. And so, it is a very unfortunate thing when we are not prepared. The saddest experience when someone leaves the body is when there is so much incompleteness, a lack of closure. For that individual, that they did not graduate, they did not take to self-realization, atma-vidya, and for others who did not have healthy association, healthy relationships, did not eradicate some kind of incoherence in the relationship, did not ask for forgiveness, did not follow through on their vrats, on their vows, then the death experience becomes even more overwhelming, and where it becomes disturbing. Otherwise, it is victory. It is a victory celebration. When the great acharyas, like the Nitya Siddhas, like Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, and others leave, it means that their mission is finished in this particular realm. It means that what they had to do and say has been done, has been said, and now it is up to others to carry on what they have been given. It is up to the Lord sending other messengers. It is up to the Lord in the heart that what has been done, and now it is chance and time for people to use what has been taught. So whether it is the spiritual masters, whether it is the great acharyas, whether it is God brothers, God sisters, nieces, nephews, whether it is your own children, whether it is your own husband or your own wife, is that at one point you are going to leave or they are going to leave. So the question is, are we ready, and can we allow those persons to leave with a great sense of happiness that we have done and been there for them, that we have associated and brought the best of ourselves into their association, that we have acted as an agent, a change agent, to elevate their consciousness while we have constantly elevated ours. And to the extent that we have not elevated our consciousness, we have been an assault or an attack on those who are around us, and we have, of course, cheated ourselves. And we have perhaps enlisted another material body for us. So, his Prabhupada's statement is that he would be leaving soon. Reminder that even if somebody lives for 200 years, they are here for a short time. Even if somebody has 50, 60 years more to live, they are here for a very short time. That somebody may have died yesterday, somebody is dying this evening, and somebody may die tomorrow, but in each case, it is moments of eternal time. So while we're in these bodies, lifetime after lifetime, it is just moments of eternal time. And those moments are important to capture and to use them as we direct it toward eternal time. As we realize that there are so many experiences to have that the soul enjoys and is totally intoxicated in. And that even the greatest pleasures we have in this body are practically like pain in contrast to the pleasures that the spiritual body experiences. And therefore, the things that we undergo now with the senses being so covered over is practically like death. So what is normally called life is like dead men and dead women walking, who are like sleepwalkers. Sometimes people walk in their sleep, and so they're mobile, they're doing things, but they're not fully conscious, they're not fully aware, they're almost mechanically doing this or doing that. So much of what people normally call life is like mechanical action, stimulus and response, following the fads, being caught up by what other people do, being influenced by mass consciousness, gross as well as subliminal, and considering that this is life while they're imprisoned and stagnated by their senses. So this is called a dead man walking. Have you seen yet the dead man walking? He is very eager to identify with relatives. He describes, or she, himself as a member of a particular continent, country, race, gender, and age group. He has pictures of all of his family members, and they of him. Once a year, they have family reunion, where members of the family from all over the country show up to discuss the latest family gossip. They discuss who has died, and who was born that year. They reflect on who got married and who has gotten divorced. Each year, he especially wonders who will be the next person to leave the body. Perhaps it will be him, for he is a dead man who is still walking. He goes to work early in the morning and returns very late in the evening. The wife and children seem happier when he leaves the house than when he returns. He hates his job, and he feels that his boss and colleagues probably dislike him as much as he dislikes their association. Still, he must continue going to work every day. But each year he wonders, who will be the next colleague to leave the body? Perhaps it will be him, for he is a dead man who is still walking. He puts away money for car insurance, house insurance, and life insurance. Several of his associates have had car accidents, and natural disasters have destroyed their houses. You know, insurance companies are some of the most prosperous businesses, and we know that they capitalize off of disasters, people's fears, and it's one of the most amazing legal rackets because it is designed to take as much money from as many people as possible and to give as little out only when they cannot find a way how not to give to you. And so where you approach that is for your well-being, it is actually to get as much money and to give you something back with hopes that you will not get back what you put in, and surely that most people will surely not get back what they put in. And so it is a very artificial way of helping people to feel secure while they're being manipulated and exploited based on the fact that there is no ultimate security in the material world with anything material. And that's why some of the most grandest buildings now, like the Kali Yuga shrines, are the banks and the insurance companies. Some have lost their members due to accidents and disasters. He has very good insurance and will be ready whenever such calamities assault his possessions. You know, in some countries, sometimes even here, but not as much in America, but in some places you have very good insurance, you may be in more trouble because you may get operations you don't need. You may get medicine and other kind of care that you don't need. So if you don't have some places you can't see the doctor, or you get substandard treatment. In some cases you have, and you may get excessive treatment. However, he doesn't like surprises, and he wonders when some or all of these calamities will visit him. It's like the people who are having calamities with the flood and the fire. And in some cases, they thought they were quite secure because they lived in mansions with all kind of security. But from the natural disasters, there was no security. And even if they were secure, that at some point, that house becomes like a coffin because the person dies in just a very elaborate coffin, which he cannot take with him. However, he doesn't like surprises, and he wonders when some or all of those calamities will also visit him. However, he is trying to realize that there's no reason to be disturbed or caught off guard, for he is already a dead man walking. As Prabhupada says, is that he will die soon. Even though at that time he was not thinking of death so much in the sense that of leaving us, but letting us know that as an elderly person, that death is soon. Even if we are young, even if we're a baby, that is just years, just a few years away before we go into another body and another body, hopefully not, but in many cases, so. Do things very carefully, Prabhupada says. I am already dead, but still I am giving you instructions as far as I can. He's reminding us that he will be leaving and we also will have to go. Back to the dead man walking. Sometimes he thinks about going back to school, take another degree, or of changing profession. He was reflecting on how the average person in the United States changes cars every 3 to 4 years, houses every 7, professions about every 4 times in a lifetime, and jobs about 10 times in a lifetime. It seemed obvious to him that everything and everybody is constantly changing. Each year he wonders what will be the next change in his life, for he is a dead man who is still walking. Every Sunday, I remember when I was a very small kid, I don't know, maybe about 3 years old,
My mother took us to visit a grandmother in Atlanta, Georgia. And it was their lifestyle. They were living on the farm. And I remember, I was so small, but it was such a wretched experience. My grandmother went in the backyard, and she grabbed the chicken, and she just wringed his neck. And so the chicken went a few steps with his neck torn off, and then died. And so it was already dead, but it was moving for a while, and then it dropped. So I was thinking how much of life without spiritual consciousness and spiritual awareness is just like that. It's just movement, where life air is just barely hanging in, and then at some point one has full cognizance that they are not fully alive, or as they enter into another case of Yamaraj and go into another body. Or they're thinking that they're full and vibrant because they're kind of on pilot, and then boom, and then the trauma fully comes upon them. Every Sunday he goes to church, synagogue, or temple, or mandir, to see mostly the same people doing the same thing. Sometimes he wonders how much they actually believe what they are doing. So sometimes, even in so-called religious environments, people are also still dead because they're engaged in their religiosity still based on materialism or common conduct consciousness, or they are still trying to just involve in eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and improving that, and they go to God in some way for just those things. So it's still a form of death. Sometimes he wonders how much they actually believe what they are doing, and how much they truly understand what they are doing. The songs and prayers are sung and chanted, the scripture is read, and the sermon or lecture is given. Every other month or so, there is a funeral as a member of the congregation passes on. Sometimes he is apprehensive to go to the places of worship, knowing that he will hear more names of those who have recently passed. However, he also knows that the church, the synagogue, temple will announce his full departure, for he is also going to die. He is a dead man who is still walking. He has been very lonely in the past. Then he met his wife. He expected her to make him happy and totally satisfied. He was sure that she would make this important miracle happen in his life. The problem, however, is that she was expecting the very same thing from him. They both wanted the other to make them happy and satisfied. What they ultimately got was disappointment and frustration, because neither was ready to be necessary to do the necessary thing to accommodate the higher needs of the other. But they expected that the other must facilitate their own a particular need. The dead man walking is actually everybody. We are all likely to be overly identifying with bodily distinctions of race, nationality, gender, politics, family, job security, education, rituals, and romance. In other words, somebody may have died yesterday, somebody may have died today, somebody may die tomorrow. But it's all moments away from our own death. And it's all a reminder to us that it doesn't just happen to someone, but it happens to everyone, and we have our own particular appointment. And it's also a reminder to us that when and how we die, that until we are out of this samsara, repeated birth and death, taking material body, that we are experiencing different levels of death. This is Marcha Loka, the planet of death. That basically the residents of this planet are not fully alive because they're not fully using their senses. The senses are very stagnated and captivated by sense gratification. And we're limited in the love and the happiness and the experiences that are available and that are accessible. And so to the degree that we realize how much we are in a dormant state, then we can do that which is necessary in nourishing the soul and be able to die before dying, or be able to die to be able to live. We must die to live. We must die from bad habits. We must die from unhealthy culture, material culture, to be able to live. We must be able to understand that this fixation on gender, on nationality, on family, on politics, on job security, education, rituals, and romance, yes, they are part of our experience here. We've had these experiences for many, many lifetimes, and we haven't used these experiences for developing higher consciousness. These experiences will be the downfall
or will be responsible for our next incarceration. And this is why Bible, Quran, Torah, Vedas, why the scriptures emphasize that we are far greater than just this physical existence, that we are far greater than just a material being, that we have a terrestrial self and we have a celestial. As the Bible says in Corinthians, we have a terrestrial, which is the physical, and the celestial, which is the spiritual. So what returns back to Krishna is surely not the physical, but it is the celestial. So if the celestial or the spiritual is what is eternal, then it means if we're not daily trying to understand that and to honor that, then we are killing ourselves rapidly or slowly, material and spiritual suicide. So we are a part of the walking dead. We often view this distinction as the essence of life, that is, pursuing job security, education, rituals, romance, politics, etc., considering everything else to be secondary. While being so absorbed, we often forget that all these concerns are very relative and temporary. In time, we will change, and others will also change. Circumstances will also be different. Most important, death for everyone will arrive soon. It says that somebody is going to come visit you soon. Something's going to come into your life very abrupt, very soon. You prepare for it. You make arrangements for it. You're ready to encounter it, knowing that it is inevitably going to come. So similarly, we know inevitably we all have to give up our existence here and say yes now to what our existence has come to, and be able to receive the rewards or the punishment based on how much we have used this life in the proper way. In time, we will change. Others will change. Circumstances will be different. Most important, and that means any little problem we have, even the big problems we have, they will all change. Things will be different. Any complexity in our life, any confusion in our life, it will also change. Any accomplishment, everything we do, it will also change. But what will not change is our consciousness and the karma that we reciprocate, that reciprocates with us based on that. In time, most important, death for everyone will arrive soon, even if someone lives in this body for a long time, perhaps up to even 100 or more years. This is still a short period, for death is inevitable. Everyone who is above will soon be dead. Everyone who is born will soon be dead. Therefore, death is around the corner for everyone. So whether one lives for 1 year or 100 years, he or she is a dead person walking. For death is coming very soon. Death shall not only change all things very soon, but shall be the final reward or experience. We know that some cultures and people die. They're cremated. Certain cultures are buried. Certain cultures are thrown into the river, or they're put on the top of a mountain, eaten by the birds. But the same ultimate is there, is that all the activities of life ended in the final samskara that now discards the body and allows the soul to move on. All those things are temporary, and now that which is eternal, the soul moves on, hopefully back to its eternal state. Death shall not only change all things very soon, but shall be the final reward or experience. We might think that our present existence, and I'll end with this, we might think that our present existence identifies and all relationships will continue for us as they are presently. But soon they will all be of the past, for we're just moments from death. We have been parents many, many lifetimes, grandparents many, many lifetimes, husbands, wives, we've been children, we've been rajas, we've been kings, we've been demigods, we've been asuras, we've been rakshasas, we've been so many things. And we have left that and entered into another body, another body, another body. So the big question is, what will be the nature of our next body? And the answer is according to our consciousness, according to how much we have become faultless, to what degree we have engaged in samskaras, to what degree our life changes have been an expression of recognizing that we are just that closer to returning home. If you did not notice or see the dead man walking, it is because you have not noticed another close enough, or even worse, you have not been honest in observing yourself. Keep on walking, achieving, excelling, relating, and reflecting For soon you will fully recognize you are the dead man or the dead woman walking. I am the beggar who has realized he is a dead man who is still walking. So the idea is die before dying, die to live, to recognize that we die to live eternally. We die to our bad habits. We die to our attachments. We die to the illusions. We die to thinking that we are the controllers of lording over all that we survey. We die to our fears. We die to the enemies of the mind, of nara, of mohan, of kama. We die to all of these enemies that constantly want us to forget that we are vibrant, eternal beings. So the mind is, we end with what we started with. We summarize, we read how Prabhupada is saying in his little lecture about the state of faultlessness. By some scholar today, someone is born, someone is growing, accelerating, and someone is also dying. And that person who is born has just come from death. And that person who is dying is just going to go into some level of life, hopefully eternal life. The Prabhupada is saying that he is instructing to follow the instructions as best as we can, that he is already dead. Although he was still physically with us, he was reminding us that the instructions, the vani, is very important. The vapu is sometimes there. The physical existence is sometimes there. Even when it's there, we usually take it for granted. And that changes. But the instructions are eternally with us. Krishna arranges. From time to time, he is sending special agents, and sometimes he's coming himself, and sometimes he is empowering or sending a ray of himself into someone so that the message continues. There's never a time when the opportunity for full connection, pure association, there's never a time that it does not exist. There's never a time we cannot connect with Madhavendra Puri, Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami. There's never a time when Lord Nityananda's mercy is checked and not available. It is always there, but it comes more and more, it's accepted more and more as we give up the physical death or the death in terms of the dull consciousness captured by the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion and even by the mode of goodness. And as we allow ourselves enter into pure goodness, then our life begins. So it's like we are walking like sleepwalkers, moving about like sleepwalkers. All the many, many things that we do, and many, many different permutations, communational arrangements, it's all like a sleepwalker. And that's why basically people are not happy. If they have, they don't have, whatever's going on in their life, most people are not happy, because you can only be so happy when one is not fully vibrant, fully aware, and fully conscious. That happiness is when we are back in our natural state in the spiritual world, in the kingdom, serving the divine couple, where we are no longer imprisoned, captivated by the shackles of material life, by this Martyrloka, the planet of shadows, the planet of death, the planet of stagnation, and the planet of manipulation, confusion, and all kinds of capitalization and exploitation. So then we read from this little reflection, a dead man walking, understanding that really life is an experience for us to gain full consciousness by using the senses in Krishna's service and reminding ourselves that we're just moments away from now being able to receive whatever our spiritual credits have added up to. So as we see life and as we see deterioration and death, it's easy to look and see it as something happens to someone else. But it is, of course, more profound if we look at it and see and evaluate our own life based on such as we begin to flourish and flourish as eternal beings. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or any comments? Krishna consciousness is a Dai Sri Sri Radha Damodar Radha Kalachan Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Goini Dai Ki. The association of Vaishnavas is as wonderful as in those associations who remind each other that we are not the controllers. We remind each other that what we say, what we do, and of course what we think should more and more be an offering that we can put at the lotus feet of Radha Damodar or Ishtadev, whatever that wonderful deity may in fact be. As our life becomes more and more an offering, as we offer ourselves, our children, our husbands, our wives, our jobs, our professions, our aspirations, as all of those are done Krishna-centered, God-centered, then to that degree, we are becoming less and less of a prisoner incarcerated in the material body and in the material world. As we mindfully look and think, what I am planning, is this something that Krishna, is this something that my guru, who is standing right in front of me, would be satisfied and pleased? Whether your spiritual master or whether Krishna is in front of us, that we're conscious of or not, is that they are, their presence is there, and our Krishna consciousness is as wonderful to the degree that they being right in front of us, receiving whatever we are saying, doing, or thinking, and would be happy and exhilarated by that, is to the degree that we are really alive. And where we are not, then we are very active, and we're very manipulative, and we're very concerned about doing things for the dead body, and giving more comfort to the dead body. Like making a nicer dead making a nicer casket, or fixing up the prison house. So this is how life goes on for most people. And where we start saying, "Dear Lord, I am yours." Where we start saying, "Let thy will be done. This is what I would like to see happen, but if it's not what you want, dear Lord, you sabotage it." How much in our prayers and our efforts in trying to do this or do that, do we think and act in that way? Then we're dead men or dead women walking. Because real life is when we have given up so much unhealthy independence that keeps us in a crazed state while we think we're enjoying and we're accumulating and we're acquiring and arranging. And so therefore, purity is based on the degree of being a puppet, of being dependent. We discussed last week that the major swarup lakshana, or the major tenet, essence of bhakti, is dependence on the Lord. It does not mean being foolish, being docile. It does not mean being inactive. It means doing your very best and not being detached. Doing your very best and accepting what the outcome is, knowing that Krishna can do this or do that according to what is best if we allow Him to do what is necessary. And how do we do that? We do our very best and we say, "Dear Lord, if this is what You desire, then You allow it to happen." But our tendency and our mixed devotion is we try to do something and then we try to find a way to justify it and to make it spiritual. We try to find a way to justify it and then to ask Guru to accept it. To justify it and then to allow whoever we're associating with to feel that it is okay, but it is something that we want. How much in our thoughts are we thinking of others as much or more? The beauty of Vrindavan is that the entities in their original nature are thinking as much and more of others than their own security, their own well-being. The insanity of this world is that we think more of our temporary selves first, that puts us last in receiving Krishna's mercy. As we think of ourselves first, it puts us backwards in receiving Krishna's mercy. Because then we rest our case on our own intelligence. And how powerful is our intelligence? Do we hear Krishna's flute? Do we hear Krishna's ankle bells? Do we know our original swarup? And if not, we are dead man or dead woman walking. We wonder, are we advancing? Have we advanced? When we understand and are aware of our original relationship in the spiritual world, then we are becoming alive, and until that time, we are dead people walking. We are like sleepwalkers. Spiritual life is about an experience of love, of divinity, and of romance, eternal romance. The great Acharya is descending in this world not just to give us a philosophy, but to give us a culture of experience. They come into this hellish place and do all kind of hellish experiences, be around all kinds of hellish environments where people basically deny or basically doubt the basic object of their greatest love. Just think how hard it is for you to be around people who dislike and want to harm your husband, your wife, or your children. And you have to associate with them every day. The Nitya Siddha has come into this world and they are basically around people who don't even really believe that God exists. Even those who pray in the mandirs, the shrines, the temples, the synagogues, most of them are praying for something material to get something based on enjoying something in their relative environment. And so those great souls who are in tune in the spiritual dimension, who tune themselves down so they can try to help those who are insane, who tune some of their own love and realizations down to try to understand the kind of disease and sickness that people have who are going on lifetime after lifetime in these enshackments. So how kind that Krishna, the Radha Damodar, are that they arrange to come sometimes themselves, and they arrange to send their great teachers, their great spiritual mentors, acharyas, prophets, rishis, and mahajans to come and to try to bring some kind of sanity into the realm and try to wake up as many people as possible. Jiva Jago, Jiva Jago. So each of us, each moment, we have the ability to say yes to Krishna, or we have the ability to find ways to justify maintaining the illusion, maintaining the confusion, and to receive the difficulties that come along with that. We can decide in ourselves how much we want to continue suffering. We suffer tremendously as we identify with this material body, and where we do not identify as much with the body, even that so-called suffering becomes a catalyst for accelerated understanding and realization and greater connections with the spiritual realm. So this dead man or dead woman walking is a reflection on the fact that when we die, we really have a chance to live. What we normally call life is actually death if it's not Krishna-centered. Your questions or comments?
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. I think I just had a question because you answered already. But anyway, I can share. But before that, one thing, in the beginning, while I was making announcements and welcoming devotees, our dear guests, in the meantime, there were others.
I think two of my god sisters here. Two of my very special god sisters who,
yes,
I'm so endeared to, and they have inspired me and inspired devotees all around the world. Rukmini and Vishaka. I think we're all graced today, you know, to have their presence.
Yes. And in the meantime, because there are devotees arriving, you know, more and more, I think they're still coming. I would like to mention a few other names, if possible. There's Mother Queen Osundara from Detroit. From Ohio is Michael Prabhu and with his fiance.
Sadhu.
Gloria, she's his fiance Gloria, she's from South Africa.
South Africa.
Gaura Bhakta.
Our family here were from South Africa.
Yes, my family.
He's the wife.
Gaura Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. A question is about a change. As you were speaking about a change, I was just having a conception of Krishna having three energies, including the tatashta, or marginal energy, that jivas, or spirit souls, are. So, and Prabhupada says how we are never in a neutral, we are always under the influence of one of the Krishna's internal or external energy. So I was wondering how we can, first of all, be encouraged to look forward to the good change and be less exposed to kind of and secondly, how we can
take your first question. Krishna has three energies, many energies, but three major energies: the Bahiranga, the Tatashta, and the Antaranga Shakti. So the Bahiranga is the separated energy, the Tatashta is the marginal, and Antaranga is the superior energies. Actually, everything is from the Antaranga, or the superior, but it's according to the temporary experience that it's undergoing. We're never really separated from the Lord, even though this temporary experience is real, but it's temporary. So we're always under the control of Krishna and his shaktis. Therefore, the question is, which aspect of control is dominant in our consciousness? The same Krishna who is dancing in Vrindavan, who is also in Dwarka or Vaikuntha, is the same Krishna who is in our hearts. The same Krishna who is arranging for forgetfulness is also giving us knowledge. Now, why the difference? The difference is based on our own use of our free will. Each case is Krishna's arrangement in facilitating the livinity in a loving way for experience of association. But it's up to us how we make our choices that determines which of the three energies, the combination of the energies that we are encountering at a particular time. Once we are no longer envious of the Lord, once there's no longer anasuyave, once there's no longer any of the lust and the greed, then we can become fully protected and captured by the antaranga shakti. Your second part of your question?
Then, down the road, how we can be ensure that the change we are looking forward in making always ongoing arrangements for the pleasure of Guru and Gauranga, that they are actually good changes, that we're not being distracted.
Well, that's where the Nibbanda Krishna Sambandha Yuktavajitate is important. We have to look and see what is happening and what is the results of what has happened. The things that we do, things that we plan, is it increasing our desire to chant the Lord's name? It is increasing our desire to see the deity. It is adding to our ability to serve the deity. It is increasing our desire to want to become pure, to be able to be more powerful change agents. It's increasing our gratitude of what Krishna has already arranged in our life. It's increasing our humility in being able to be more affectionate and more compassionate towards sadhus, those we agree with, as well as those who we disagree with. It's allowing us to develop, in essence, the 26 qualities of a devotee. Whatever helps us to develop those qualities is very beneficial and should be encouraged. And what isn't should be seen as like poison or like suicide to our devotional creatures. And we say, all that said and done, what does that specifically mean? Pray and do your best and receive the consequences. Is that something? Krishna keeps a very tight score. He's in everybody's heart. He knows the intentions. Because even though we can make mistakes or do something that's not so perfect, we did something that wasn't so perfect, we made a mistake. But what's really significant is what is the consciousness. Because all of those things we do or don't do is all going to be very soon temporary. But what is not going to be temporary is the consciousness that will bring about the ultimate result. That will bring about how Krishna reciprocates. We can look at the process of Krishna consciousness very, very difficult by looking at all the little details and all the managerial issues and all the institutional issues and all the project issues. Or we can look at it as a chance to give up the controlling energy, a chance to give up the sense gratification, a chance to give up the excessive attachment, and a chance to be, you know, like Draupadi and just realize that I am yours. Uttara Pahi Pahi Mahayogin Deva Deva Jagapate. She's praying, you are Yogeshwar, you're the supreme mystic. No one can save me but you. So sometimes Krishna lets us go through so many things for us to finally come to a point in realizing that really we never were controlling. And really, he was waiting to arrange things even better than we could ever conceive what to say that what we can do. He was just waiting for us to let him to do it for us. But many times, like the little kid, the kid wants to keep doing and doing. And then finally, the kid turns to the mother or father and makes himself available for the mother or for the father's help. Any other questions or comments? Where's the mic?
Gurudev, when Maharaj Yudhishthira was asked by Dhammaraj that what is the most amazing thing in this world, he answered by saying, the most amazing thing in this world is death. Because everybody is dying, yet everybody thinks he's not going to die. My question is, when one knows he's going to take an exam, he prepares before he goes for the examination. And we have the common saying that that says, as sure as death. We all know we're going to die, and it's the final examination. But most of us do not get prepared before we take the exam. So what is that that really makes one forgetful about the final exam in order to prepare before he goes for that exam, before he meets death? What makes us forget?
Mm-hmm. Not so long ago, you were in school, and you had that experience of sometimes knowing that you were going to be tested, but not studying properly, not being ready. What was the reason? What was the reason that you didn't study properly? Just go back and look at your own case. When you were in school sometimes, and you knew that the course you were taking, that there would be periodically, there would be examinations, but there were times when you didn't prepare for the examination, even though you knew that examination was, in fact, going to come at some point. What was the reason, you know, that you found yourself not prepared? Just give me an example. What's the reason? So you can answer your own question. What's the reason sometimes?
Sometimes, due to bad association, like you have some friends you want to go out with and have some fun, and sometimes you feel that fun is much more important than the exam. So you forgo the time to study for the exam, and then you go out partying.
It's similar. That there are other things that we prioritize. There are things that are happening around us, happening to us, that we get involved in, and we get distracted. Also, it's a sign that we didn't take it sufficiently serious. It's a sign that we thought that we had time, we were going to prepare for it, but we kept procrastinating. It's a sign. We just weren't sufficiently mindful. We didn't sufficiently organize our lives in a way to make it happen. And so it's the same thing that happens. We hear every day, we read Prabhupada's books, we hear the lectures, every day we hear what we need to do. You know, it's not a mystery. But then the question is, why is it so hard? Why is it so difficult? We know some of our weaknesses. Some people are breaking principles. They know what principle that they break. So why do they do this year after year or month after month, even though they know that there's going to be consequences? This is the deadness. This is the craziness. You saw somebody putting their hand into a stove, into a fire, and then they're screaming, oh, I'm hurting, I'm burning. And then they take it out, or you pull it out, and they put it back. They do it again and again. So we do something like that. It gives us great pain, we suffer, and then we go right back into the same thing that caused us to suffer again. So you can imagine what it's like then as we start becoming aware. We look back at our own past and we realize, how do we do those things? We look at others and we realize, how can they continue to do those things? And then it helps us to see how thick that the illusion can in fact be. And that's why there is need for good association, so that it checks us from getting too far into the illusion. And we need good role models and mentorship that we can be able to see that can guide us in knowing what is to be done and how it is to be done. And that's one of the reasons we have the samskara, as a way to remind us not to get distracted. This change means this, and this change should mean this. You should try to go here and be there. Maybe one or two more short questions, then. You have to drive quite a distance back this afternoon. Who has the microphone? It's not working? Yeah, just they're about to just speak loud.
Gurudev, in your book Conquering the Enemies of the Mind, and in character building, doing inventory work and internal work on some of my own personal bad habits, that procrastination and sloth, which comes from a deep seat of fear of more responsibility. Mm-hmm. So when I'm slothful and I procrastinate and I keep failing in the same areas, it's due to just this fear of failure, fear of more responsibility. So it's definitely a sloth, coming from sloth.
It has to do with shraddha, with faith. Vaya fear. Fear is tremendous uncertainty about the future. Fear has to do with disappointment, sometimes in the present and the past, and some carryover of what may happen in the future. When you feel the future is secure, it is for your well-being, your best interest is being considered, then there's no reason to be fearful, but one is to be joyful. So often our fear can have to do with our doubting of Krishna being the controller and the well-wisher, and our fear that if we surrender, maybe Krishna may not reciprocate, or may not reciprocate the way that we want Him to reciprocate. Otherwise, as Krishna said, yayata mam prapajante, that if we surrender, He rewards accordingly, then we have nothing to fear, because we realize if we do our part, He is going to do His part even more than what our quality is. So there's this constant underlying fear the conditioned soul has that causes us to, you know, causes us to procrastinate. And the doubt what Krishna can do. Sometimes it takes many lifetimes. Bodhisiddhanta explains that for most aspirants, it may take at least three lifetimes, because one work something out, and there's doubt, and there's fears, and there's lots of aparas and offenses, and then another life, and other experiences, and experiences. But it doesn't have to take hundreds and thousands, or it doesn't have to take three lifetimes for the serious seeker. It can be in this lifetime. But it just shows the degree that we can know, but not fully accept, or not fully allow ourselves to have sufficient effort that then brings, you know, sufficient mercy.
Gurudev, you seem to draw the conclusion of your talk towards the consciousness, and I was just thinking about several scenarios that can happen at the final stage with the consciousness. Some students probably study so well and finally they don't pass, then others sort of maybe play around and still somehow with little effort they were able to make it. And some others probably didn't do anything at all and they fall somewhere else. So I don't know how you could adjust deep with several other scenarios that can emerge based on the conclusion that the consciousness is the factor that matters at the end of it all.
Well, we have to look at what is the test. Material test may be based on, you know, regurgitation. A material test may be based on how someone does something to please the instructor. It can be based on all kinds of things. But the spiritual test is not the same. The ultimate instructor is Krishna Himself. So Krishna cannot be bribed. He cannot be ingratiated or flattered for one to get a good mark. He cannot be tricked in such a way. Somebody didn't really apply themselves. And all of a sudden they somehow come across, you know, the night before they cram. So it's a difference. This is the beauty. And this is what we can always be happy about, is that whatever is going on in our lives, Krishna is looking at what is really happening in our consciousness. And He is evaluating, reciprocating with each of us based on what is happening in our consciousness. And that we cannot cheat on. We can confuse ourselves and confuse others. We can do things with all kind of, you know, mature motivations. And this is why in Bhagavatam it says like that, we cannot get love of God by tapasya, by yajnas. We cannot get love of God by our knowledge, by austerity, by renunciation. All of those things can help in the background.
The love of God is locked up in the heart of the pure devotee. Krishna's agent, which is the way Krishna makes himself available. And so therefore, Krishna, is the pure devotee, is very dear to Krishna's heart. And so as such servants beg upon the conditioned souls, share their mercy, then that which is practically almost impossible, it becomes a reality. That's why these great souls like Srila Prabhupada, and in our particular mission, how we have so much focus on the Acharya, almost super extraordinary, that we have the murti and we bow down and we say the prayers every day and we start the morning off with the Guru Puja, with the samsara, and we do the Guru Puja and we have the Vyas Puja and we have the departments, and we have so many things that people can, who don't understand it, I think we're just doing a hero worship. But we are so much honoring the ambassador who comes and makes that which is practically impossible. He makes the door and the key to the spiritual world available for us. And that comes based on, you know, genuine submission and dedicated service of such. Okay, last question, then we have a feast for you. Yes.
That's my turn. Gurudev, before coming in contact with Krishna consciousness, I know people have idea that it is within God's plan that we forget certain things, like death, and sometimes when someone get accident and many other things. People see truth in that. So, what do you say about that? Because they say that if you don't forget things like that, then things will become stand still. They'll move. When we don't forget death, and we're always thinking of death, then things cannot move as it is moving now. So what do you say about that?
Well, you take a basic situation. Somebody who's trying to make money. They don't think about making money. Would they make money? No, they have to plan. They have to strategize. They have to organize themselves. If you want to eat, if you don't think about it, you don't arrange, will you be able to eat? Even to sleep, you have to make some preparation. So in our day-to-day life, we're constantly making preparations and trying to make something happen. But the cheating mentality and the laziness thing for children is we'll always be in some kind of katha. There's something we're talking about, something we're thinking about, some kind of mantras are going on in our mind. Huh? So we're constantly engaging in some type of internal dialogue. And of course, what our internal dialogue is more important than our external dialogue. So as our internal dialogue, first we change the external, and then the internal dialogue begins to change. As the internal dialogue gets more and more focused, then our whole being goes along with that internal dialogue. Internal dialogue is not restricted to the geographical arrangement. It's not restricted to the physical, the external. One can be in any kind of environment, any kind of situation, any kind of place, and the internal dialogue can be very, very wrapped in terms of service to Krishna. One can be very incapacitated and still have very, very strong service or seva, mental seva, internal dialogue. So the externals are really designed ultimately to bring about a healthier internal culture. As the internal culture gets stronger and stronger, that breaks the molds of material nature, and that begins to lodge itself with the proper service attitude in the spiritual realm. It is the service attitude more than even the service rendered. It is the consciousness even more than the things that we accomplish that Krishna is taking notice of. Otherwise, we could just do so many things or arrange so many things and we go back to Godhead. It doesn't happen that way. You see so many people do so many things and become an embarrassment. Krishna's not bribed that way. He's not bought off. But where there is mature consciousness, where we are developing the Vrindavan consciousness, the selflessness consciousness, where we are not putting the body and the mind and intellect as all in all, and we are understanding that we are something beyond who we think we are, that we have an original nature, we have an original existence, we have an original relationship, and that we are hungry, when we are hungry for having that again, then we start planning and organizing and protecting the creeper, and it comes to a point where there's no question of falling back into the molds of material nature. Because we've done that, we've been that,
We've been burnt out with that enough. And more important, we're beginning to have taste from what we're experiencing from the higher realms, and we want more and more of that. So the dead man walking begins to realize how dead he or she was, and they're beginning to experience a little bit of the life, and now they want to come fully into full awareness and cognizance and to accept what Krishna has been offering all along as he is calling with his flute. Srimati Rani is beckoning with her mudra of blessings and summoning the living entity, the jiva, back home to the land of eternal romance and eternality. ISKCON founder, charge his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sivuvad ki, C.C. Varadamana Daganapala Dev Supatra Gornita Vaishnava Kaur ki. Hare Krishna.